What's up, everybody? It's your girl, Keisha, from Put Your Phone Down podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so excited to have this special guest on my line. Before I really introduce him, I want to tell you the amazing artist that he is. In 2016, his work was featured on SportsCenter after the Cubs won, and that led him to meet and do work, charitable work, for the owner and the players. He has a phenomenal record. When you go on his website, and I'll let him tell you where his art and his art tells a story. Since he was a child, his mission was to always break the mold. And I butchered it probably the first time, but I'm going to say it again. We use the catchphrase M-O, but it's the modus operandi. This young man has so much to talk about the work he does for society. As an artist, he's always thinking outside the box. He starts with the phrase, "The starving artist is an irresponsible myth." And I'm going to say that again. The starving artist is an irresponsible myth. I believe most artists or people who call themselves artists can absolutely relate to that. He has so much in store for you all. So without further ado, I have the talented artist who is going to make you think outside the box before this conversation is over, Mr. Jay Weinberg. Thank you so much for joining Put Your Phone Down podcast, Jay.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. How about me? Am I good to go? Jay?
Hello, hello.
Okay. All right. You good?
You got me?
I'm good. Yes. Now, okay. I'm going to try to edit that dead air out because we will not be doing this one again. Okay.
Sure. Understood.
You're about the sound checks, how, you know, they come in mind. But Jay, I really want to take time, and you know this, to thank you for getting on this podcast and telling us more about you, just sharing you with us. So I know we spoke briefly about who, you know, you were as a child, and we joked about breaking out the matrix, but, you know, Jay, can you tell me, you know, basically what your MO is and your love for art, because this is phenomenal.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I consider myself a wizard of intentional serendipity. It's something that I say often, and it's just really a perspective shift, I think. And, you know, basically it's about being fully present. And, you know, at that point of being fully present, we become alchemists. And for me, gratitude is the philosopher's stone. So what I mean by that is, you know, just finding a way to be grateful and the challenges that are presented to us. So the mountains before us aren't obstacles, but they're ladders. They're opportunities for us to climb and get a different perspective and see the world differently. So, you know, we've all heard the term tough love. I use that a lot, I think, in my art. I've run the gamut from parody and satire to pretty much full on in your face. There's a quote on my website that says, "I'm Norman Rockwell with a sledgehammer." And, you know, some of my work hits pretty hard because, you know, to shatter the mold, you have to sometimes swing pretty hard. It makes me think of a quote from the movie Seven, where he says, wanting people to listen, you can't just tap them on the shoulder anymore. You have to hit them over the head with a sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. And, for better or for worse, that's part of the culture that we live in, I think. And, you know, my work is confrontational and sometimes it's comedy. So it just kind of runs the gamut of my experience and the way I look at life.
I think that that's what we need. You know, One of the things that I think you and I can agree on is so many people that like to straddle. No, if you go get on the line, walk it, you know. But a lot of people are afraid. What your work does is it does bring, at least bring a conversation piece, you know, which of course is a dying art within itself. But were you always that type of artist that was like, you know what? No, I want to get people's attention, you know, in any type of way.
You know, with my music, it definitely started that way. So I was 10 years old when I told my mom that I was going to go to the American Academy of Art in Chicago. And that's, you know, she always empowered me and that's precisely what I did. But, you know, then I started doing music and the early days of my music was very much socio-political. It was very, you know, it was, I actually was really centered in hip hop. My best friend that I met in art school, we started kind of just rapping in the hallways. It was started out as a joke, but then it something about it drew us in further. And the music that I started doing at the beginning was always very socio-political, in the same way that I think the best hip hop, especially of the 90s, was, you know, Common Sense being one of my favorite hip hop artists of all time. And of course, going to art school in Chicago and having the backdrop of knowing some of the places that Common was talking about, whether it was, you know, the mosque on Stony or, you know, going to River Oaks, you know, all those type of things. So, you know, there was a real heavy social political influence in my music all the way to when the music started to transform away from just solely what we would consider hip hop music and started to turn into more pop, swing, all over the place, rock. And we just started to just try different types of sounds, but still get our message across. You know, as I started to shift into that, one of my for sure moments of being an iconoclast and being good trouble, right? We've heard good trouble and being a good troublemaker. I wrote a song, I think it was in 2006 that I wrote it, but then 2008 was when we went to the studio, recorded it, produced it. Whole really, really long and extraordinary story about this song, Price Gouging, but I was basically talking about the dependency on fossil fuel. And on one hand, it sounded kind of like a novelty song. It sounded like I was, you know, just complaining about the price of gas, but I was complaining, or rather trying to articulate the full cost of full dependency on fossil fuels, what it means socio-politically, what it means for inflation, what it means for geopolitical conflict, all those types of things. And I tried to tuck it underneath this joke of a song. Well, then when I got on the roof of a gas station here in Indiana and got arrested and was on Good Morning America and Howard Stern's radio station and, you know, riding a bike to Washington, D.C. later that year, you know, it became apparent that I was trying to do something a little bit more. So, yeah, my work, you know, sometimes say art imitates life, but life also imitates art. And sometimes it's hard for me to know the difference where the line is because I paint things. I always say that we're all creatives, whether or not we consider ourselves artists, we are all artists because life is a creative process and your days are your canvas and the motions that you make through your days are your paint and your brush strokes. And, you know, when you look back over the course of a life, you'll see the painting that you've created or the sculpture that you've made, you know, as you chisel through different aspects of your life. So, yeah, I mean, I've definitely been knowing what I wanted to do from the time I was a boy. And, you know, a lot of my social political views were already have been ingrained into me since I was that young. I mean, I grew up in a small town, Knox, Indiana. And Knox isn't necessarily known for its open-mindedness. I don't mean to disparage because it also has its Mayberry apple pie, you know, goodness too. And there are great people. I have family that still lives there. My great uncle Harold Weinberg, his name is on the gymnasium as part of legacy because he gave back so much to the community. And he, in very many ways, is a North Star for what my life is to try and give back. But it also had the other side, right? The underbelly of, you know, the Grand Dragon of the Klan lived in Knox, Indiana for a time, and of the Indiana chapter at least. And so growing up as a boy and having a Jewish last name and the Jewish family business and all of that, as a backdrop to also simultaneously some weird, you know, racist, you know, neighbors or something of the sort, it gave me a really different perspective, I think. And in my studio, I have a children's book that my mom gave me when we were young. She gave us this series of children's books. It's all the values of imagination, the value of sharing, and the value of courage is the Jackie Robinson story. And it sits on my shelf still to this day because I remember being already vehemently ready to fight back for something at the time I was a young boy that didn't make any sense to me. Why was Jackie Robinson treated in such a way? And you know, that led me it's informed my whole life, from the books I read to the relationships that I develop to the art that I create, and just always trying to dig a little bit deeper behind the curtain.
And it sounds like from just a baby on up, you always knew it was a purpose, you know, just bigger.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm hearing the way that you pretty much manifested, you know, spoke it into existence at 10 years old, no, this is where I'm going to be placed.
Sure.
And these are the people that I'm going to meet. And this is the mission that, you know, I'm going to make, which is what you said earlier, like, you know, being intentful is what pretty much is leading you at the pretty much you're the leader of the pack. And at times may have not felt like it, you know, when you're doing art. But I wanted to also, while we're talking about this, and I think that this is a great segue to bring it in, is on your YouTube channel. You talk about breaking the invisible wall. One of the things I mentioned to you is I call them sheeple. Mm. I think that this blends in well with what you just said about, you know, not necessarily knowing what line to cross. And I think I started thinking, I wonder, is it really a line? You know, like, sure, this is how we get seen when we're doing something.
Right.
But let's talk about that invisible wall and that story that you had, pretty much being at like an invisible stop sign, or the gates went down on on the train tracks.
Yes,
people went out of their way. No train was coming, just the tracks, you know, the gates were down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you said, no, I'm not doing this. If there's no train is coming, then why am I trained? Yeah. Why am I trained to turn around? So let's talk about that.
Yes. Yes. So it's funny. There's one thing I want to mention before I end up not talking about it. And in 2022, I wrote my first book, and it's titled Serendipity According to Francis. And it's in honor of my dog. And we had to say goodbye to our dog, Francis, in early 2022. And it tells a lot of these stories. That's why I bring it up. The intentionality, the magic in our lives, and you know, the fact that you said that 2020 was different for you than it was for other people. It created a shift for you in perspective, and that then it becomes a blessing in disguise at that point, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
It becomes good, bad news, right? The bad news that says, oh, you're fired, that leads you to the better job, you know, or the better opportunity, not even a better job, but your own business, whatever it might be, right? And so in 2020, it's funny that you brought up that invisible walls video, because in 2020 is when I really kind of took on a similar path to, I've not gone anywhere near what you're doing with your podcast, but I did, because we were all internal and we're all in the house and we're all looking for ways to kind of relate and communicate. I started a little bit of a video podcasting thing myself. I just don't do it with regularity and consistency, but I do love to journal my thoughts on video and put them out there when it's really striking and I feel like I have to put this one on. And so the one that you're talking about was probably a few weeks ago when I had pulled up to the train. And yeah, the arms came down, and I knew that there was no train coming. It was way too long, and I just watched the first person at the front of the gates. I was probably about three or four cars back, and they turned around, and then like lemmings, the people behind them turned around, and I'm just sitting there thinking, this is, I literally have about maybe 50 more feet to go to get to the place I'm going on the other side of the tracks. Otherwise I'd have to drive a couple of miles out of my way, maybe to go a different way. So I'm like, there's no way I'm not just going to go up to these tracks and not irresponsibly, you know, go around, but I'm going to look and see, is there a train coming anywhere within sight? And can I just drive around these arms as they're down, knowing that it's just a glitch in the matrix, really is what it was. It's the black cat, right? It's a glitch in the matrix. So I'm like, it's kind of like, I guess you could say it's somewhat of a test. And so it made me think about the notion, there are times when, like, if you're at a, say if you're in the middle of a road that's a country road, abandoned road, whatever it might be, and there's a stoplight there, but there's literally, you know, there's nobody around. You'll sit at that stoplight as it's, you can feel it. Like you can, for myself, I've sat at stoplights before where I'm like, man, I just want to go. There's nobody around. The stoplight is created, right? As a social, guide for safety. That's why we use it. It makes absolute sense. But if I'm in the middle of nowhere and I'm sitting at a red light and there are no cars for miles and miles around, you know, it's not really, the purpose for that stoplight is not there, but yet I can still feel that invisible wall that's between me and the stoplight and my programming. I can feel it and I won't go. You know what I mean? And so just being able to perceive that feeling and that pause for a time, I just wanted to take that and then relate it to things that are even less tangible. They're less in our face. The stop signs, the stoplights are there as these major symbols. But when we go into our daily living and we think about our dreams, we think about our aspirations, and we feel these social stop signs, these people telling us, no, don't do that. Don't go over there. Don't wear that shirt with those shoes. Why did you buy those shoes? How are people going to think about you when you wear that? How are they going to think about if you say this? You know, for better, for worse, we are still a social, we're still social primates as human beings. Like we go towards, I don't know if you know this concept, but in like chimpanzee hierarchy, there's an alpha male, and the other chimps will go to that male with the palm up is the way that they go. And then the alpha male strokes their hand with a downward stroke. And I say that because in so many ways, that's what we're doing still with social media. You talked about the notion of before this interview, you talked about the notion of a restaurant, right? That has been completely empty until maybe one influencer or somebody of repute says, oh, you got to go try this. And the next thing you know, it's packed. Well, I don't see that we're going to get out of that anytime soon. So the best thing that I can do as a person operating within this structure is to challenge those conventions and to, you know, kind of, you know, poke the bear sometimes.
I'm all for you poking the bear, and I just noticed, I'm like, man, we talk about time going fast, and we are almost at 20, and I'm going to just blend this in with
Sure.
breaking the mold and basically you telling us who you are since you have been walking. Like, no, I know who I am. I'm going to find out more about myself. It leads back to the art. And so while I was on your page and I got lost in just how talented you are, I'm going to name just a few. And can you tell me what headspace you were at when, with this? So
Absolutely.
first off, I don't know if I want to get mushy with this or not. Okay, no, I'll
It.
start off not that way yet because you're going to get me crying. But let's talk about the Cubs one, the one that went viral. What was your headspace when you did that?
It's titled Field of Dreams because this story we could talk for, I've talked for hours about this story alone, but the short version is my dad was an alcoholic. My dad was abusive. My dad, didn't quite support me. He wasn't there when we were young. And he was, in many ways, I say, and I talk to my dad about this now, he was my Darth Vader. You know, he helped me become the Anakin of my story because in many ways I do everything that my dad didn't. I've never had a drop of alcohol in my life. You know, it's led me away from, you know, any substance use of any kind, really, just because if you don't do that, it's pretty easy not to do anything else. But when the Cubs won the World Series, kind of like Ray Kinsella in the movie Field of Dreams, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he hears a whisper of a voice and it says, ease his pain. And he says, if you build it, they will come. And for my dad, when I saw the Cubs win, I was like, that Christmas, I just knew that I had to paint that painting for my dad. It was a voice that said, you got to do this. This is it. You have to do this. You have to mark this moment. And I did it out of an expression of love, unconditional love, the kind of love that heals, not the kind of love that I would do a painting like that for my mom. You know what I mean? Because my mom is a saint and she's been a North Star in my life. And so for my dad, I did it because I needed to do it for us both as an act of forgiveness and healing. And it changed our relationship. So.
Wow. So again, ladies and gentlemen, that is the one that went viral. I have it posted on my page. Jay is on your page as well.
Sure.
And if you ever want to see a grown man cry, man, Jay's dad got the whole wet face. But now we know the story behind it. I mean,
Yes.
it was just a beautiful gesture. So that's Field of Dreams. Next, we have Midas's Love, Gold Kisser. What was
Yeah.
your thought with that? What's your thought process?
So, Kelly, who is Kelly has been my muse, was my muse probably since 2015, when we first started talking. And we just, you know, we're doing this interview now because that's how we connected. It was through Silver Stray, Kelly's nonprofit. And, you know, the story behind Midas's Love is it was about a challenging time that Kelly and I had really early on because, you know, Kelly's past. I don't want to go into the whole thing for her, but she, you know, many ways she grew up in a household where the traditional path was the path. You know, you go to school, you finish high school, you go to college, you go to college, you get the internship, you get the internship, you get the job, you move up the chain, like we just talked about again before this interview. And my path of the artistic entrepreneur has always been, you know, the rogue. It's been the path of not knowing. And you know, she so early on she didn't quite understand that path. And the Midas's Love was really about a point in time where she was expecting me to be in a different level of success than I was. And I tried to tell her, I was trying to tell her, like, this is my journey. And the success isn't always financial, you know. Sometimes it is, and it's still my aspiration to reach that because I feel that money is energy, and as we move, as we, the more money that we have, the better things we can do with it. and AKA look at what Silver Stray is poised to do now. And so, you know, a lot of it was like, the reality was, I was saying it with that painting was, if everything I touched turned to gold, then, and she and Kelly and I couldn't be together on my journey, and only after I was successful with what I was doing, then I would never actually be able to be with her. I would only be with a reflection of my own success. And then simultaneously, there's a tear that you can see kind of rolling down the cheek on the painting. And simultaneously, as I talked about alchemy earlier in the interview here, it was kind of this notion that when we change, we die. A part of ourself dies, and that's painful. So change is always painful, or usually painful to some degree. And so the other side of that was, maybe my touching Kelly in this experience, touching her life, was an alchemy of her experience, and that was going to create a certain pain for her. And she could tell you that there's definitely been some tears of joy and some tears of pain. But that's that painting. I could go on again for a long time about that painting, but that's really what it represents in a nutshell, is just alchemy and change. And, you know, the notion of all that glitters is not gold. And there are different ways to see success.
Oh, listen, okay. I'm not going to go there, because you already know where I was when I asked you about it.
Yes.
I just want to go deeper and just shout out to Twin Flame Journey. I just kind of felt like I needed to say that one. But
I
want to further on down, because, man, look at us. We're 26.
I know.
okay. We go squeeze this in. I am butchering this man's name.
Yeah.
Yes, please finish it off for me.
Yes, I got
okay,
you.
Okay, so when I get on there, of course, it's him. But I mean, my man got tattoos on him and everything. It's awesome. What was your inspiration behind that one?
You know, actually, the very first time I did one of those, something like that, was a client actually asked me if I could illustrate that, an Orville Redenbacher with tattoos. And then I got this idea to turn them like hipster clothes and kind of really turn it into a contemporary juxtaposition. And I do that with a lot of work. I do that with my Well-Regulated Militia series. There's where I'm kind of taking we have this idea that certain figures are maybe were like so innocent. It's kind of like you think about your grandparents, right? And when we talk around our grandparents, we don't cuss, we use the right language, you know, all this and that. But like, at the same time, you know, at some point, somebody dropped a motherfucker along the way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, if mm-hmm, I may say mm-hmm. so, you know.
Please do.
And so, you know, the idea of having these iconic figures like Orville Redenbacher. I have one that I did of Barney Fife. Like taking these really kind of sanitized images and realizing that these are just people too, and just having fun with it. And kind of putting them into modern settings with tattoos and, you know, flipping the bird or whatever it might be. And, you know, I have a couple others that I want to do, like a Mary Poppins one, you know, just some of the more sanitized, you know, figures that we might have in pop culture, and just kind of throwing them and turning them on their head.
And it's so dope. So we got Sweet Feet, Walter Payton, and the last one, but not the last. I mean, but before we wrap up, because they definitely have to find you where you are.
Sure.
Is this really dope one? So we got Sweet Feet, Walter Payton, number mm-hmm. 34, but we're going to dance over to Frederick Douglass. And that's that's such good work. What was your inspiration behind that? And then you can wrap it up by telling us after that where we can find you at.
So obviously that series is one of the closest to my heart, the Well-Regulated Militia. I am not in spite of the fact that you'll see a lot of weapons on the paintings themselves, I wouldn't say I'm a pacifist, but I'm definitely more along the lines of nonviolent resistance. But there's a juxtaposition that I'm trying to create with that body of work that asks the questions, what is this notion of these supposed good guys with guns? Where does that come from? What is this weird fascination that we have with firearms? And why is it one-sided? You know, like I said, I told you I was going to go to the American Academy of Art from the time I was 10 years old. I met my best friend at the American Academy, Tony. We started working on the hip hop, and you know, Tony's a black man. My godsons are black. And so it's like, there's a difference between me walking down the street with a pistol on my hip than if Tony walks down the street with a pistol on his hip. And that whole series is about bringing that conversation as it applies now to the idea of what the Second Amendment may or may not have said. It's 50 words long. It doesn't just say we have the right to bear arms. It says a well-regulated militia, and then it goes on. But there's a lot of history really to dig into, and that's what I want to get into. The title of that piece, and I know I need to wrap up here, is The Climax of All Misnomers. And it's based off of a speech where Frederick Douglass said that, "I love the Christianity of the Christ, therefore I must despise the cradle-robbing, women-whipping, slave-holding Christianity of the land. It is the climax of all misnomers and the grossest of all libels." And so basically you'll see a rosary on that painting that kind of also ties into that notion of potential hypocrisy and, you know, what it all means when we get down to the realness of it. So I'm painting a series of what I consider to be the great American heroes, that their stories aren't as told. Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, John Brown, you know, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and so, and all the way down the line up to, you know, contemporary time. So I could go on and on about that. I would love to talk more about that series, because it's really, like I said, it's really my main, like, that Frederick Douglass painting is my Mona Lisa to me. It is my, it's the thing that I know I'll leave behind and say that I was here as a human walking this planet. So
it's an awesome piece of work. And I don't want to leave it at that. Actually, you know, you can always come back for a part two, because I think we just pretty much just got to the peeling of art and who Jay Weinberg is. But Jay, I know that they can find you, and if you can just leave them with your platforms. Sure. And like I said, the door is always open for part two.
I would love to do a part two. So you can find me on Instagram at JJ Weinberg. Weinberg is WEINBERG. And that's also my website, www.jjweinberg.com. So can definitely find me there.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have just busted open the matrix today, and that's my kind of conversation. That's a good day for me. Jay took us down a walk of his life and how pretty much art has saved him. You know, that's what an artist is. We are superheroes, and I will continue to say that. Jay, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast and speaking into me as I was speaking to you. Shout out to Kelly, you know, for Silver Straight, everything that you have going on. I'm so thankful for the both of you. And Jay, people will be finding you, okay? We are going to follow you and Kelly to the ends of the earth. For my listeners, thank you so much. Like, share, and visit Jay's page. And until the meantime, thank you for listening to Put Your Phone Down podcast. I'm your host, Keisha.